This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Giri Balakrishnan and Tan Chung Han. And we start the Wednesday on a high note. It is midweek, as Wednesdays are. And therefore, we can look forward to this week end coming up very soon. But of course, there's still quite a bit of the week left to do, you know, and things, places to be and people to meet. Any plans for the day, guys?
Besides work, you mean?
Yeah, besides work. I mean, life is more than just work, isn't it, Giri?
Some good food. Lunch is already on my mind.
Lunch is on your mind, yes.
Forget breakfast. You know, forget breakfast. Just think about lunch already.
Okay, yeah. If you stick with the morning run, we're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock in the morning. That's close enough to lunch as we can get. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us 018-789-8899. There's a lot of bad news out there in the world, but there's some good news and some interesting developments in that story about the young boys who were caught in that cave. Remember, with the major cave rescue, the Thai boys, all of them except one who's a Christian, are being ordained as Buddhist monks.
Right.
Not permanently, but as per a Thai tradition, young men become ordained and they do it for a week or a month or something like that in the course of their lives.
And there has been an outpouring of support for the 13 of them, the 12 boys and the coach, right? For example, some of them did not have citizenship, so there have been calls for them to be given full citizenship. You know, now they're being ordained as part of a Buddhist ceremony, right? And amid all this showering of accolades and adoration for the 13 of them, I think it's also important that we remember all the other true heroes in this story, you know, those who actually went to great lengths, and even that one who put down his life to rescue all 13 of them. You know, there was a tremendous amount of support involved in getting those boys to safety.
Yeah, this was really for the Wild Boars, the football team, it was quite a relief to know that each and every one of them was saved, and nobody was hurt in that entire rather frightening experience, especially when it comes to looking at the age of these boys. They're really young and could have had quite a significant impact on their lives.
Well, I guess we don't really know what the long-term effects are. They all seem to be full of smiles every time the camera's trained on their faces. But the long-term trauma, I guess, might be quite internal. We haven't had those stories of trauma yet. It does seem like they're a happy bunch. Speaking of happiness, for those of us looking for gender equality in the world, there's this wonderful story of a woman who's become the coach for the male judo team in Brazil. And Yuko Fuji is the woman coach. She's there now coaching the Brazilian men's judo team.
All right.
This is after being thrown as a young girl, thrown by a male competitor during a training back in her own home territory. And now she's doing quite the opposite in Brazil, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, so she's become a trainer, and that's something you don't see very often. It tends to be, I don't know if it's true, but my impression of sports is that it's quite gender segregated, at least between trainers, and athletes.
Well, in football, for example, you've got female referees, you've got female head coaches, not exactly in the elite leagues, but they're increasing in number there. So I think that, there's only one way up from here.
Okay, and we'll be back with more. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Oasis with Some Might Say. I'm Sharad Kutin, and Some Might Say, Giri Balakrishnan's guest hosting. He is guest hosting with us, Tan Chung Han, also in the room. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock in the morning with a range of interviews, news, and analysis. Now, there's an expression I hadn't heard until I read this article, that is ghosting. Ghosting was something you do to annoy your relatives. You know, you kind of hang about and do nothing in particular. Apparently not. Ghosting is not turning up for something. That is a new expression. I didn't know it existed. Apparently, people are doing this even when they have an official appointment for, like, a job, for instance.
Yeah, that's a bit of a worrying trend. It looks like people get a job or get an interview and they just bunk it or don't turn up. I think the situation may be more prominent in places where you have full employment or high chance of getting new employment, and interviewees or potential candidates for a particular job may just decide to offer something different.
Right.
With a higher pay or better benefits.
Right. But, you know, if you do actively partake in this ghosting phenomenon, doesn't that show a sign of, doesn't that show disrespect though, to the company or to the potential employers who actually blocked out some time to meet you, but then you just plain don't show up?
Yeah, maybe it's also for those who don't show up, feeling that there's no consequence. Yeah, I don't show up. I don't really want the job. I put it out there just to see if my CV had any value. You know, somebody would call me back for an interview. Testing the waters, especially at times, in good times, and this is the study, we're going to be tweeting it out, the link to the study. The context is, in fact, high employment, right? So people don't necessarily apply for jobs because they need it. They're applying for jobs for other reasons.
Well, it looks like they may be fishing for better options. This is not just interviews. These are people who have actually gained employment. They turn up for 2 or 3 days. And then they walk away from it, and they just don't even respond to whoever the employer was, which is just basically rude.
Well, yeah, but I'm just trying to find the rationale and the justification. I'm trying to get into the minds of these individuals. I mean, fine, Sharad, you say that they're just trying to test the waters, but you can very easily preempt that ghosting opportunity by sending a text or email saying that, hey, I found something else, thank you very much. No, don't even bother with the interview, right? As opposed to actually having that interview scheduled and then actually ghosting.
But maybe it's a function of arrogance, right? So if you remember the good times of the mid-90s, Han, I know you were still in shorts then, but you know, people really, because the times were so good, were demanding high pay, completely out of whack with, incommensurate, let's say, with their qualifications, and that's just a function of being confident, right? Confident that either your employer wants you or you can get another job. You don't really care, and people are not thinking about the long term consequences, like your reputation in the industry.
Right.
Somebody might turn up, call, you know, us one day and say, you know that guy, did he ever turn up at BFM? And then, tell the story.
Well, we actually had that episode happen at BFM just not too long ago. But Sharad, there is a very distinct line between being confident and being just downright unprofessional, right? You know, so I think that distinction has to be made there.
There are situations where people have turned up for work for 3 days and then walked away. And
is that ghosting as well?
That's ghosting as well.
Oh.
It's not just not coming up, not turning up for the interview, but turn up for the job, three days, and then come back at the end of the month and say, where's my pay? Which is, it just goes against the grain of basic courtesy, actually.
Well, okay, so we've worked it out with none of us in this room like people who ghost. I think Han's trying to get into the mind. Maybe a kind of a... sort of employ some empathy for those who actually do this.
Well, maybe because I may have done this.
Oh, you yeah. You did? Oh, okay.
I'm being vulnerable here. No, only because of that expanded definition of ghosting. So I was thinking that before you start the job and you don't show up, well, that's just rude. So I actually showed up for a job once, right, for 1 day. And I was just, I told the boss, look, don't even have to pay me. This was a mistake. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Okay,
bye-bye.
So you did inform them.
Yeah, I did inform them.
No, but that's common courtesy. You've informed because it doesn't
fit. After 1 day, it was not a good fit. I won't tell you what it was. It's totally embarrassing, but it was a big mistake.
Okay, you were a Playboy bunny. That's my guess. did a job for 5 days. I decided I didn't want it anymore, and I faxed my resignation in after 5 days. My boss, who was also somebody I knew socially, was very, very unhappy with that. I did inform them. It's just that I did it by fax.
Okay, Giri, your turn, buddy. Nothing?
No confessions?
No. I do have one confession. Okay, 5 days. Yeah, that was the record for me as well. I just couldn't deal with the circumstances that I had to face.
Well, I win one day.
Okay. Hans always the winner on BFM 89.9. We'll be back. BFM 89.9, Modern English with I Melt With You. It sounds like bad England, actually. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han. And guest hosting is Giri Balakrishnan. Now, the Ministry of Tourism, Arts and Culture has set a target for Malaysia, our country, our beloved country, to be listed as one of the top 10 tourist destinations in the world this year. Seems like quite a feat, but you had to consider this. At this point in time, we're ranked 12th. So that's just a couple of steps up.
That's actually a phenomenal accomplishment. I mean, 12th in the world for a tourist destination. That's very good. We've already recorded arrivals of about 8.5 million for the first 4 months of the year. If you annualize that figure, it's we're looking at, what, about 25-odd million arrivals. So the target of 33.1 million may be a bit of a stretch. And he was actually saying this at the national level celebration for International Museum Day. I'm not sure how many of those tourist arrivals actually translates to visits to the museum, son, but...
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea we have 37 museums here in Malaysia. Go figure, right? I guess what really constitutes a museum, that's up for a discussion for another day. But now, going back to the intent here, right? You know, why do we want to become in the top 10? And I guess more importantly, how do we break into the top 10 of that list? You know, because you would think that what attracts a country, at least, you know, from my personal experience, when I choose my vacation destinations, it's very much what's inherent in the country as opposed to something that's manufactured. So I wonder how much you can really massage your way up into the top 10.
Yeah, when you choose your holiday, is it, something that, like the natural beauty? And I think Malaysia has quite a bit of that. We have natural beauty, we have heritage and architecture. We also have interesting histories, so stories that can be told. We are reasonably safe. There've been some problems, but I don't think tourists go to countries where, you know, with the expectation that there's zero crime, for instance. So if we're at 12, what more do we have to put out in our messaging to the world to get us over that next little hump?
Well, we have a lot. I mean, you're right, Sharad. We have a lot to offer in terms of whether it's natural beauty or even from the entertainment perspective.
Well, just in the studio, look at the natural beauty around you.
You in particular.
Now, thank you very much, Kiri. I think he's going from guest host to a permanent star.
Calm down.
So getting back to the tourism bit. So tourist dollar, that's important for the economy. Now, I think one of the areas that we could really see some improvement is our public facilities. This is a point which I've always paid a lot of attention to. Some of the facilities that we have is really substandard. If you walk into one of the public toilets, for example, it looks like the last patron of that particular thing was Freddy Krueger. It just looks like a disaster.
Okay, so you're hanging out in public toilets, taking a measure of the cleanliness.
Hanging out.
Well, that's very good. I'm glad you're doing it. It's a public service. I mean, actually, in this day and age, I mean, the new Malaysia, we need people, as we have so many vigilantes, watching restaurants. You know, like we have had all those videos come out about bad restaurants and habits. Now, I mean, we have somebody
who's a vigilante hanging around in toilets.
Figure out where the dirtiest toilets in town. But do small things like that really matter to tourists? I mean, are they looking for a toilet cleanliness index?
Well, I guess, again, it depends on the type of vacationer or the type of tourist that you are, right? For some, for example, the ease of getting around, the transportation infrastructure, the state of public toilets, the ease of communication, or how much English is spoken, or how well you can communicate with the locals, that may fare highly. But for perhaps myself, I'm not too, hung up on that. Because, for example, I love the Gili Islands, not the Giri Islands, but the Gili Islands, right, off of Lombok, right? And it's quite the trek to get there. Before AirAsia started their flights to Lombok. Before that, you had to take a two-hour boat ride and all that. Definitely a lack of amenities on that island, but it's still a very popular tourist spot.
Okay, tell us what you think. Remember, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. The question is, how do we get more tourists coming to Malaysia? Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Sugar Ray with Every Morning. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me almost every morning is Tan Chung Han. And guest hosting today, Giri Balakrishnan. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock in the morning with a range of interviews, news and analysis. And remember, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. In the news today, as he always does, controversial president of the Philippines, Rodrigo Duterte, now being taken to task for apprehending, arresting both children and adults whose only crime is loitering.
Yeah, this problem that of loitering, I think we used to face a lot of this also in our own country. The thinking is that what are these boys, girls, men, women doing loitering around shopping malls or markets or even toilets for that matter. It's a bit scary because you don't know what they're up to. They're not being very productive. And it can't exactly be very a securing fact either, walking into an alley, seeing these people loitering around doing some very suspicious or strange-looking things.
All right, so you're referring to that whole Bosia, Bojan, Budaya Lepa thing.
Exactly.
The thing that reached its peak in the 90s, you know, because I remember being cautioned against being or partaking in that Bosia, Bojan culture in the 90s when I was in school. I don't know if it's still a thing today. But coming back to the Philippines context, well, this one in particular, I mean, it's aimed at slum dwellers for loitering. Now, I mean, think about that, right? It's not exactly that they have the best public facilities or, you know, the most comfortable homes that they can spend their time in, and so they have to find an outlet somewhere. So, you know, what's wrong with them? Well, some might call it loitering, but what's wrong with them just walking about town?
Yeah, it's actually quite interesting, this idea of loitering. And in some countries, they have vagrancy laws, right? And just to note that the Philippines decriminalized vagrancy in 2012. If you take a kind of historic look at vagrancy laws, they often target the poor, the vulnerable. Those are disadvantaged in many countries. They have to do with racial inequalities as well. So the idea that these people, if they're loitering or not doing anything, are up to no good, is a class position. It's a position of privileged individuals who are looking down at the working class poor and saying they're not being productive. I think is deeply troubling. More troubling than people actually loitering.
Well, yeah, you have a point. I mean, they should be really looking for some kind of employment, or, you know, but it tends to become a vicious cycle, staying in that same kind of environment and not actually moving around or looking for something else to do.
Yeah. Well, okay, so again, that line of reasoning assumes that they aren't looking for employment, and as if, you know, it's just right there, you know, to be plucked out, right? This thing called employment.
Well,
right?
So if you look at the article, I'm going to tweet out the article. People are being arrested in the evenings. They have their shirts off. They're relaxing, apparently, in public places, and are being arrested. Now, to give a little more context, Duterte was quite famous in his city, Davao, where he stopped children being out at night. And this was about stemming the child sex trade. So there was some good that came from it when it came to controlling the movements of children, because it had to do with exploitative adults. But to take in perhaps working adults who are out there and relaxing with their shirts off, seems to be quite excessive.
Heavy-handed, right? I mean, it really much, it depends on how that particular society defines social order, right? Some societies might have a higher tolerance for individuals shirtless walking about in the dark of night and just hanging out, whilst other societies might not. You know, you look at the norms in Singapore, they are obviously a lot more tighter bunch compared to perhaps us here in Malaysia. So I can understand the need for social order, but where do you draw the line? I think the line drawn in the Philippines there, it seems a bit heavy-handed.
The thinking seems to be that if you're loitering, you're being unproductive. That's the bottom line.
Well, but they're already on their downtime, though.
Hang on. Unproductive is one part of it. The other part is if you're loitering and not doing anything which seems productive, the immediate thought is that you're doing something which is illegal or unsavory. So that's maybe where
So who gets to define that? Who's swooping has a kind of helicopter view of people loitering? Because people loitering might be just talking to each other, having a conversation, catching up on the day's thing, maybe even having a discussion about philosophy. Who knows? You know, two people in an alley discussing Immanuel Kant. It could be.
No better place to discuss.
Who's going to say, right? The police officer coming down the alley has the right to say, you weren't involved in a proper discussion about that German philosopher. I mean, is that? Okay. Tell us what you think. You can always tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Should loitering be criminalised? Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Kings with Waterloo Sunset. I'm Sharad Kutan, with me, Tan Chung Han, and guest hosting today, Giri Balakrishnan. Thank you, Hiswani, for your tweet. You say, arrest the MPs who are loitering outside Dewan Rakyat when they should be inside the hall or inside Parliament. Great suggestion. You're doing one better than Saluddin Ayub, who's the Agriculture and Agribusiness Industries Minister, who says that MPs' allowances should be cut if they skip parliamentary sittings.
Well, is this something that we should look at in the correct light? I mean, are they actually there present at the parliament, or are they just loitering around outside? They've gone for a break, whether it's a teh tarik break or a less healthy break. With cigarettes or whatever it may be, or have they just not turned up at Parliament at all?
Right, so this is in response to apparently what happened yesterday, and we'll talk more about that at about 7:15 a.m. when we go through the local papers. So turns out at yesterday's parliamentary session, there was a session whereby the full quorum was not achieved, and so Parliament had to be delayed, right, for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, so it's only 10 minutes. So we have to put this in perspective. It was post-lunch.
Still.
And it's a question of discipline, I think, and that's perhaps the optics of it, right? That parliamentarians, many of them newly minted, either don't know or don't care about their responsibilities, at least in terms of the debate in the House, and keeping, abreast of those debates. But it was only 10 minutes. Having said that, the quorum only requires 35 MPs to be in there when they should be a full house of 222.
Yeah, that's a bit strange. The number that you mentioned,
35
out of 222, that's like 15% or something.
That's right. That's what quorums often are. They are a small percentage of the total, right? In order to make something, allow proceedings to go ahead.
Right. So, look, I'll be willing to give the benefit of the doubt to these MPs that the 200 plus who were not there on time. I mean, can you imagine if we did the same thing? Oh, morning rhyme will start at 6:10, 6:15, or whenever we feel awake enough, right? So, again, given that we are in this Malaysia Baru, there is a tremendous amount of burden and responsibility on the ruling federal government of the day, right, to make sure that they are up to task and really leading the way in terms of making sure that we have this a new culture in Parliament. And looks like, judging from yesterday's episode, we still got some ways to go.
Well, we should also consider the ones who are absent. I mean, they may be off doing their duty outside.
Yeah, maybe.
We need to remember that as well. I can't just paint everybody with the same brush here.
Yeah, so I agree with Giri on this. I think there is an issue around other duties. Ministers have duties. Remember, this parliamentary session goes for 20 days, and because they only sit for 4 days out of the five, they sit from Monday to Thursday. That effectively means 5 weeks, right? If they are there from morning until evening when Parliament ends, what is the opportunity cost of being in Parliament? Having said that, it also has to be said that Parliament doesn't happen all the time. So if lawmakers aren't there making laws or debating it, there's also a loss. I mean, a lot of parliamentary constituency work can be done by others.
Right. And also, you don't want to run the risk of being labeled a hypocrite as well. Okay, I'll give you this story, okay? In the lead up to GE14, I attended this Cerama, and the then opposition lawmaker was blasting Najib. Why? Because he estimated that Najib was only in parliament for 5% of the time, keeping in mind he was in prime minister, right? So if now you are not towing the line, right, then aren't you guilty of the same crime you accused of the former prime minister?
I don't think it was a crime. Here you have it, right?
Transgression.
So okay. I think understanding what people in government do, the executive versus the legislature, they're two different types of functions they have. Because ministers who are part of the executive are also members of the legislature, right? But the idea that parliament is a place for a robust debate. I don't mean the shouting matches that unfortunately have been entertained by of late. Real debate is something that, and I agree with you, Han, and it's the optics for the new government that's so important.
Just do your job, show up on time.
Okay, that's been said. The law has been laid by Tan Chung Han. Okay, taking us up to the next bulletin of the morning, a neutral milk hotel with In the Aeroplane Over the Sea. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.